We're grateful this morning to have a number of visitors. This is the warmest welcome we can give you. I have four cars at my house, and not one of them is cooperating. I said once a long time ago when I had two cars and neither one was working that the Lord might resolve my problems by taking both of them away from me, and then I wouldn't have any trouble with cars again. We are blessed in so many ways. And if we have difficulty, it's largely as a consequence of our great prosperity. We're thankful to be warm this morning and to be together and to have such wonderful thoughts to share about the Lord that we serve and about our Heavenly Father, who in His mercy and grace has brought us together, redeemed us as a people for His own. And so we rejoice in these songs as we speak of Christ, and we rejoice as we see one another, and we rejoice especially as we are privileged to sit about His table in His kingdom and remember who He is and what He did and who we are and what we also have to do. With your permission this morning, I want to continue my Italian odyssey. I didn't finish a week ago. And I thought it behooved me to continue the discussion of these things. You may wonder why I am talking about this so extensively. I beg the same cause as the apostle in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, when he says, I am proving by the earnestness of others the sincerity also of your love. I can tell you that I went to Italy with just a slight tinge of skepticism. I have learned that over the years. I remember occasions in Wisconsin many years ago when a certain worker among the Indians on the reservation would always get huge crowds together when brethren from the South visited, and he did it by announcing that blankets would be given away on that particular Sunday. There is the story told about India, that one Indian disciple turned to the local preacher and said, how many times are we to be baptized? His reply was, as many times as the Americans come. So some sad things have happened to give us a healthy skepticism, but never, and I believe this earnestly, never should all these disappointments, however they may come, cause us to be cynics about lost people and the need to reach them with the gospel. The Lord suffered many things from men. Disappointments, I am sure, that no heart of ours could fully comprehend nor describe. But He died for them. He was no cynic about humanity. And we must never be ourselves. But I'd say what I've said to help you understand that I went looking with a careful eye. And my response was just exactly as I described it last week, taking a passage out of the 28th chapter of Acts, that when Paul came to Rome and saw the brethren, he thanked God and took courage. So did we in meeting these fine disciples across the Atlantic. How shall I continue this story? Perhaps by reminding you of what I told you a week ago about the experience of Brother Rodolfo Berdini. When he first began preaching in Aprilia, a community of 50, 60,000 today that's south of Rome. That when numbering 12, that little church arranged to hire a hall and to have five nights of preaching, that they were met the first night by a rowdy bunch of boys who tore up the inside of the hall and rocked the outside and caused that little group to flee with the protection of the two policemen who were present who did nothing to restrain the violence of this ugly crowd. And that the next evening there were 150 present at 5:30 waiting to find out what this strange preacher had to say, and 70 policemen to try to control things. And as I told you then, it got into the NBC News, the consequence of having gone first to some European radio station. But what I didn't tell you was that during that very week when so many were coming out to hear what this strange fellow had to say, that the Franciscans were going into the factories in Aprilia and warning the men who worked there that you are taking the bread from your children's mouths if you continue to attend this meeting. In other words, the threat was not veiled. You will lose your jobs if you continue to attend. Not only that, but after these days, Brother Berdini was called to a conference with a local police chief in Aprilia. And he sat down with his chief captain and he said, "What do you want? What are you after? Do you need a good job?" He said, "I can see that you get a fine position at the Vatican if you just put a stop to this activity." I tell that story so you will better understand the kind of men we're dealing with. I have no interest in scandalizing the Italian people. Those things happened as they were reported to us. I said last week that you preach Christ in Italy in a monolithic Catholic society that either responds with a strong opposition or by an indifference born of "who are you, tiny little pipsqueaks that you are, to threaten us. We don't have any concern for you." But that at the very outset, had these men wished the comfort of position, had they been looking for affluence, had they been looking for financial, material advantage, they were offered that. How can I tell this story best? By looking at some of the preachers. Brother Berdini, who is an accomplished, I don't know how to describe it, architect. That is, a planner of houses. His son Gianni, who has a virtual doctor's degree in architecture. His son-in-law, Roberto Tondelli, who was more than halfway through his engineering degree when the pressure and needs of the church in Aprilia and in Pomezia were so urgent that he left his studies. About the young attorney who preaches for the church in Udine, who's never practiced an hour of law as a consequence of having, in the midst of his studies, come to know the power of Christ. Now, the young brother who preaches in Latina, who was an electrical worker and left his work in order to labor with five people in that city of 100,000. What this tells you is that these men are not in it for the money. We are sending money to them. The cost of living in Italy is higher than the United States. That became evident to us on every hand. As I noted with you last week, to become a gospel preacher in Italy is to become an invisible individual. You will not be recognized by the government as a worker. You cannot pay income taxes because they don't even recognize that you exist. Now, that might seem to be a delightful prospect to you, But the sales tax in Italy is 19%, and more than that, as a consequence of not paying anything into the income tax fund, you also are privileged not to have any benefit from the medical insurance that the country offers, or any retirement benefits as well. These men have no provision for their future, save what you send to them and what they're able from that to save and to put back. They have none. Their medical expenses are paid as they're able from funds that they can generate. They didn't have to do this. As I told you a week ago, Gianni Berdini, before he came to this country, said, "I don't want to preach. I didn't want to preach." He could see what preaching was going to demand in Italy. He'd lived with it. He'd crouched in the back of a car as a little child in Aprilia when that mob had attacked them. And had fled with police escort out of the situation the first night. He knew. He was old enough to remember. Probably Rosanna did not remember. She was virtually a babe in arms. He didn't want to preach. But like Jeremiah of old, though he tried to shut up the word of God within his bosom and utter it no more at all, he felt the pressure of it, and finally, as a result of his own deep conviction that the gospel needed to be preached, and whether he wanted to do it or not, he was obligated out of his discipleship to do it. I'm not trying to elevate these men. They have their own challenges and problems. They certainly have the same flesh and blood as we do. But they're preaching against difficult circumstances and doing it, it seems to me, in a very faithful and earnest way. Let me give you an illustration of what it takes to convert somebody in Italy. The work in Europe has always been slow. I've known that since the early days when my brother went to Switzerland in 1957, another brother went to Austria in 1959. There never has been any time, I think, in the European work when things just went rapidly. Now, there was an early period, as we spoke of it last time, when the gospel was first preached in Italy, when they seemed to really be reaching a lot of people. And as Brother Berdini spoke of those days, he called them the wonderful days, but it's always been slow. Brother Franco Durkee, who is a member of the church in Pomezia, where Roberto Tondelli preaches, first heard the gospel in 1980 through Sister Maria D'Amico. Her husband's not a Christian. She has a daughter. That's the one young man I mentioned who was unmarried and beautiful, named Patrizia. And I've had a lot of inquiries about that since last Sunday's sermon. But she talked to Franco about studying, and was able, through her influence, this godly woman, to make an arrangement for Brother Tondelli to get together with himself and his wife and study. He was a communist. He was an agnostic. And after a very brief study, he said, "I am not interested in this." Next year, 1981, Maria began again to approach Franco about the gospel. And Roberto, when he would meet him on the streets of Pomezia, would greet him and say, "When are we going to study the Bible again?" Finally, that year, he agreed to meet him, but not in his home because of his wife. And they started to study again in the meeting place, but not at the regular time. His first words to Roberto were, "You are not going to convince me of anything." Roberto said, I remember having said to him, "I'm not really trying to convince you of anything." And I think his intention was in saying, "I'm not trying to overwhelm you with anything." Roberto said he made every argument about the existence of God that he knew. To which Franco replied, "Well, those could always be explained another way," though he didn't make any other arguments. After 2 or 3 hours of discussion, it was obvious they were not getting anywhere. But he noticed he was an avid reader. And so he gave him a copy of the New Testament and the Psalms in the Luzzi translation of 1930, which was more modern than the old version that he had in his home. In the first week, Franco read 10 chapters of Matthew and came back, and the easiest question, Roberto said, was, "What is this Holy Spirit that I'm reading about?" Other questions were about the genealogy of Jesus and about baptism and several other things. And Roberto said he was reading the New Testament with the bias of a communist. He was concerned about the equality of men, and there were some things in the gospel that were attracting him here. Social ideas, you understand. And the task that Roberto had was to help him see the spiritual thrust of these things. It took 1.5 years, added to the 6 months and more of the early contact, before Franco Durkee became a Christian. He afterward confessed to Roberto, he said, "I was ashamed to come to the meeting place at first. As a communist, I was embarrassed to be seen at a church meeting." So he would not come to the regular meetings. He just studied at the off hours. Finally, he did come. And after he became a Christian, his wife, Giuseppina, when she saw that her husband was serious, began to listen herself, but more out of the duress of her husband's change than any serious interest on her own. 1.5 years later, Giuseppina also became a Christian. About her, Roberto said, she will break herself to help others. They have one son, Paolo, who is not yet a Christian. He's a young man in his teens. That's what it takes. That's 3 years to get one couple. Franco Durkee is a very active member of that assembly. He writes part of the material that's published by that particular congregation in order to reach other people in the community. The head article I noticed in one of their publications written by Brother Franco. What I'm saying is that these men spend hours and weeks and years in their effort to convert people. I recall that in arranging the schedule in Trieste that Gianni said, if it's possible, I don't want to interfere with any of my regular studies with people. Can you understand why? They are teaching continually in homes, in whatever situation they can find. It doesn't always turn out so well as it did with Franco Durkee and Giuseppina, his wife. Many times these months and years are wasted, you might say, because the people don't respond. Or perhaps, as in the one case I think I mentioned last week, you spend 3 years teaching people in two different sessions, and finally they become Christians, only to fall away 6 months later, when you find out that the only reason the father, at least, obeyed the gospel because he was looking for good companionship for his children. It's not easy to preach the gospel in situations like that. But when you see these people who are the product of this kind of investment and you see the depth of their faith and their commitment, then you understand that it was worth it in every way and that there's strength in these churches that is to be admired and appreciated. I want to come back to the Aprilia church. As we noted last week, there's the largest church in Italy. In 1976, when division came. Do you remember how that all happened? A young man by the name of Glenn Jones made a trip to Rome to look the city over, and by happenstance was put in contact with Rodolfo Bardini. Never saw Rome, spent 2 days talking about the problems in the Italian churches. Urged him to write a letter, write an article, send it to Connie Adams. An unfortunate thing happened, you see, in the churches in Italy. And that is a consequence of the mindset of some of the American preachers that came there. It became more immediately important to establish institutions rather than to preach the gospel to lost people. They established an orphan home in Frascati. They set up a Bible training school in Florence, and also later a camp so that everybody could come and enjoy themselves at this camp. Now, this caused not a little consternation on the part of Italian Christians. And Rodolfo was full of it when Glenn came in 1976. Or, well, 74, I think, 4 or 5. Now, I want to make a point again about that. You know, we're going all over the world as tourists. Right? We have the financial capability to do that. And I want to tell you that at this particular time in history, the doors are not open for men to go into countries in many places as preachers. Just not possible anymore. I spent 3 years in Nigeria. I could not go back again as I went then. They wouldn't give me a visa to do so. I can go as a visitor, but that's it. So that much of the great work that is going to have to be done in the future in the world may indeed have to be done by saints who just happen to be in places, whether for a vacation or because of business, and they take that occasion, as they would always, to make contacts for the gospel. I would feel really troubled if I had visited through other countries and places in this world, and rub shoulders with countless people who are lost and never made one attempt to say to anybody, as I went, are you a Christian? Do you know the gospel? And then to teach them. But of course, that attitude and spirit begins with what we do here in Louisville. And if that's not our disposition here, it won't be our disposition there, and it needs to be our disposition everywhere. I say that because this young man, who never returned to Italy after, who today is preaching in Kiel, West Germany, and doing a tremendous work, I might add. Consequence of his work, he's had openings into the churches throughout the German-speaking world. And has been able to address the problems that those churches have known from the vantage point of the New Testament, has given expression to his own deep convictions about the way churches of the Lord ought to function and work, and he has been receiving a hearing in many of them, respected and regarded. But just because of this one thing, and Brother Berdini writing that article from Italy with sadness, the trouble came. The church and the people divided. And it hadn't much more than divided till a new work began in Pomezia, where Roberto Tondelli began to work. And also, after that, a new assembly was begun in Latina, where Brother Fossey is preaching. And all this out of the church in Apulia. Now, to give you some background here, again, I know I've gone over some of this already, but Brother Berdini has been busy in these last several years. The first thing he's done is converted his own children. Two daughters married to gospel preachers, one son preaching. The ties between these people are interesting. First of all, you have Brother Carazza, who's a sound and faithful gospel preacher at Viasanio in Rome. And then you have Brother Berdini. And of course, these two men didn't do this by themselves because they had to have their wives, but their children. Brother Carazza has two sons who are preaching the gospel. I'll just indicate the name of these boys. Some of you may know them. There is Stefano, who's preaching the gospel. And there is also Rigo, who's preaching in Alexandria. Both of those, that's his children, those two boys preaching the gospel. Brother Berdini has a daughter who married Stefano. Brother Berdini has another daughter who married Tondelli. And he has a son who is preaching the gospel and whom they're helping in the preaching of the gospel. But that's not all of Brother Berdini's work. Roberto will tell you that even though he went up to Florence Bible School and studied, that it was his father-in-law who taught him, really, what it meant to be a Christian and to preach the gospel, the nature of the church. And he said, you might as well put my name down as one that he trained. So he has his two daughters, married to gospel preachers, and a son-in-law that he helped train, and a son that he trained. And within the church at Apulia, he also trained Vittorio Bartolotti, who is the song leader, and I would say a prospective elder in that particular congregation. He's the present time training a young man by the name of Gennaro Crescenzo, whose parents worship there, who's grown up there as a young man, who has a fine, godly wife. And recently he told the congregation that you need to be preparing for the time when I'm not here. I'll not always be here. And you're going to have to help this young man and see that his hands are upheld as he takes the place in this assembly that I have held in preaching and in teaching. There are others in the congregation who are fine. I think of Enrico and Giulia Fasciani, two older Christians who live on a farm. You don't get to visit a farm too often in Italy. Most everybody lives in a hire. And they live out on a farm. He was able to purchase a part of the farm that he worked for years on. Now, that seems to be the rule. When the landowner decides to sell, he must give his workers first crack at it. And he was able to purchase a part of it. And they have a home there. And in that home, not only Enrico and Giulia, but Roberto and Elia, his son and daughter-in-law, who are faithful, sound, solid Christians. Elia's sister, Rosa Guadagna, has two fine sons. strong families and a single daughter who are members of the congregation in a preview. That gives you some sense of the makeup. Young people, older people, people from all kinds of backgrounds, brought together as a family and continuing to work earnestly to see that the gospel preached elsewhere. I know that this congregation is helping Brother Bedini with his expenses. I know that they sent money to Stefano when he first went to Udine in the north, Brother Bedini's son-in-law, in order that he'd have money to have a hall so the church could meet in. They didn't have any money. And so that arrangement was made. It seems to me that one of the great stories out of all this modern story is the story of the church in Udine. I know I told part of this story last time. If I've repeated myself, you'll be forgiving. I know that when Stefano went there, as a result of Gianni having mentioned him to the little church over in Udine, you remember that they started with seven, and two were killed, and three left on account of Stefano's preaching, and they had two remaining. And for 2.5 years, they met in the house of that couple without a single response. There was nobody who came. Nobody was converted. And yet they dug in and continued that work. The result of it was that today there's a very vital congregation meeting there. And you know that in 8 years, Stefano has not only taught and encouraged and produced as a result of the preaching of the gospel by God's help, of course, it's his work. A congregation that's vital, basically young, who are in their liberality as great, probably, I cannot say that. That is, in terms of finances, they give about as much as the church in the preview. But he's also converted and trained the man who is replacing him there. Valerio Marchi, the young attorney. Now, that's a tremendous work. I wish I could say I'd done that somewhere. You know, you can hand out blankets and get the crowd to come, or you can tell people the Americans are coming and get the crowd together, but you cannot produce this kind of thing on demand. You cannot produce these families. You cannot produce this commitment that cannot be manufactured, that cannot be simulated on the spot or on demand for some sort of public relations purposes. What I'm saying to you is there is an evidence of depth and commitment in these brethren that all the testing in the world you want to do still comes to mean the same thing. They've done some tremendous work. The church in Pomezia, we met there, Aldo and Maria Pia Bianchini. Maria Pia has had surgery. She's suffering from cancer. They hope it has been arrested. But she continues to work hard. They have two married daughters who are faithful in the Pomezia church. He is a builder and works for others, basically, but he built his own home. They have a little foster son, an Ethiopian boy named Ismaili, who was very active and we saw a lot of. And then there's Giorgio and Lydia Pederosi. He was quick to tell me his name meant Robin, Redbreast, you know, he said. And when he first met me, he said, George Washington. That was about as much English as he could get out. And these two men, Aldo and Giorgio, according to Roberto, seem to be the best prospects they have for elders. The church there helps Roberto with his travel expenses, which are considerable. They are now paying $700 a month for their meeting place. It was increased from $400. And Roberto said that it's in a place where if it were rented to some commercial enterprise, the man could make $1,400 or $1,500 a month. And they knew it when they talked to him. But he only raised it $700 and said he wouldn't put them out. The church in Udine to the north pays $800 a month for their little meeting. These are small places. You could put everything they've got in this auditorium and you'd have plenty of space left over. Half this auditorium is bigger than the kind of space they've got. And they're paying these kinds of prices. As near as I could tell, Roberto Tondelli seems to be supplying the $300 a month for an office in Albano, where they're trying to make some inroads, and where we spent the last Friday evening of our time in Italy listening to Brother Verdini speak on the family to an assembled group that had been invited by the dissemination of invitations all up and down the city by the brethren. Now, what I want to say to you about these Christians is that they're all involved. And when I get through with this part, I'm going to tell you a Christmas story, and then it's going to be all over this morning. What's the nature of these Christians here? How are they involved? We've talked about the preachers and their commitment and the fact that they've sacrificed not a little to preach the gospel. What about the brethren? Well, what I can tell you about the brethren is, and it is, I can tell, I know this probably could happen as a result of visitors coming in, but this is the report that was made by the preachers, that the attendance of Christians there is about the same at every service. I just wish I could say that here. And I want to say it. And not only do I want to say it, I want to work to make it possible. I want to be as faithful as I can be. Everybody thinks that I come to every service because they're paying me. I know that. That's the impression that preachers have to... I mean, we bear that burden. What I got to say about that is, if that's the only reason I'm coming, you need to stop my salary forthright and quickly. Because if I wouldn't preach the gospel without getting a dime, I'm not worthy of any support at all. And I tell you, that's my attitude about anybody in this world. If men are not preaching the gospel because they love the Lord and because they're disciples of Christ, they don't deserve support. This is not a business. It's not a profession. It's an expression of discipleship. I need to preach the gospel for the same reason you need to preach the gospel, with the full extent of your ability expressed. So also my obligation. Every one of us needs to invest all we can. But that's the attitude in Italy. And I can understand why, because when you become a Christian in Italy, it's going to cost you something up front. You know that in the beginning. It doesn't cost anybody a lot socially in this country. Nobody's going to fire you from your job. Your family's not going to run you off, maybe, not nearly so likely here as it is in Italy, where that strong Catholic majority just does not appreciate at all having their sons and daughters brought into this kind of madness, this departure from all they've ever known, and where strong family pressures are often applied. But when they become Christians, it's a serious business. I noted with regard to the passing out of invitations to the meeting in Albano that various members of the congregation, remind me of Douglas Hill, various members of the congregation had the responsibility to hand out these invitations in various parts of the city. And each one was taking his responsibility and doing that. And when time came for them to be together for that meeting on that Friday evening, they were there. For them, it's a serious business. They are different from the world. They're different from the world they live in. They've acknowledged, they've accepted that difference. And they're willing, for the sake of Christ, to be different in a way that perhaps you and I have not experienced. The church in Trieste has a telephone answering machine. And they advertise the number of it on the buses in the town where they put signs. The Italians have been doing this for years. I read back the history of Rome, found out they've been putting placards on the side of buildings for a long, long time, and that's the way they advertise things. This little church in Latina has put signs up in the middle of the boulevards all over Latina, a very modern city, advertising the place and of the meeting. And Brother Fossey was so pleased to show us everyone, and as he was driving us through Latina, he said, "Oh, Echo, 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 look here, you know, right here is another one of our signs." They are spending money, they are spending themselves. The three brethren who preach in the north, Brother Gianni Bedini, Brother Stefano Carazza, and the young brother Valerio Marchi are publishing a magazine called Cristianismo Oggi. Oggi, I believe, more correctly. Which means Christianity Today. You say, where are they getting the money? From their own pockets and whatever somebody else will give them. It's not cheap to print that material. And then they're mailing it out to a select mailing list of people they have and then handing it out free to others. Nearly as I could tell, it was Roberto, as I said, who was providing the $300 a month that it took to get an office in Albano so he could have some place to make contacts. And again, I saw both preachers and members who are making sacrifices in order to preach the gospel in Italy. And if we are sacrificing to help them, we will not sacrifice more than they. And while we were there, they would not let us spend a dime except with great resistance. They continued to ask us, did we pay when we were in your country? That wasn't a good enough answer for us. We knew what their needs are and what it was costing them for us to be there. But they stubbornly refused to be anything but hospitable. Now I want to tell you my Christmas story. Roberto and Rosanna Tondelli have two sons, Stefano and Daniele. They're not much alike. Stefano is a very quiet lad. He's a seventh grader. Daniele is anything but quiet. He is forever effervescent and emoting about the house. And Roberto told me a story about what had happened on a recent holiday season called Christmas. He said, Stefano approached me. They don't have a tree ordinarily. You and I can't fully appreciate that as we ought, I think. You know, we don't know when Jesus was born. That's not a revelation. Any good encyclopedia will tell you we don't know the year, much less the day or the month. We don't know the year. Our calendar is probably all 4 or 5 years. Because we know that Herod the Great died 4 B.C., which is a little hard. He died before Jesus was born. That's by our calendar. We don't know when Jesus was born. It's not in the New Testament. Not the slightest hint. Any celebration of his birth is not known until the 4th century. Early Christians did not celebrate his birth. You read the New Testament through. See if you can find a single case. See if there's any provision made for it. The Lord was not slack concerning other things. He told us very clearly about this supper. Told us we ought to come together and eat in remembrance of him. Example, the New Testament, Acts 20, verse 7, that he did so on the first day of the week. We have clear instruction. But we don't have anything about this celebration of his birth. Christmas is an English word, of course, as you can recognize, which means Christ Mass, which comes out of the Catholic background, celebration. But in Italy, this is a religious festival. Everything about it is religious. I don't mean everything about it. I mean, there's a commercial side to it. But deep in this Catholic society, it is a religious celebration. And it is affirming in no uncertain terms that this is the occasion of Jesus' birth. When the Virgin gave birth to Jesus, it is the occasion when we celebrate that fact. It is the occasion when we're involved in the celebration of it. And so the Italian Christians are loath to have anything to do with it. And I think rightly so. Anything wrong with a tree? Not that I know of. I burn them in my fireplace. I've had some dead-looking plants in my house. I mean, dead trees probably, a lot of places. But it's like the principle that the Lord established in the 8th chapter of 1 Corinthians, 10th chapter of 1 Corinthians, 14th chapter of Romans, that we do all things to edify. We do all things out of love for others. And sometimes a thing that is not wrong in itself and is innocent in itself can become a stumbling block or can cause people to think about us what we don't want them to think about us. And that is that we also are joining in this great celebration of the birth of Jesus in the world, 25th of December. So circumstances demand that we choose our course wisely. It might be a situation that wouldn't make any difference whether you ate meat offered to idols or not. Paul said, eat it. Good meat. But if a brother comes by and says, this meat has been offered to idols, don't eat it. For his sake. That you might not embolden him who does not understand that this meat has nothing to do with any kind of deity. That it's just simply good meat. But he'll understand that here a sacrifice to some idol is being offered. And you are partaking in the benefits of this God's largesse as he gives it to you because you worship him. Don't do it for his sake. And so there are times when we don't do that. Anyway, I give you all that as background. Stefano came to his father and said, Dad, said, could we have a Rome soccer team trick? Wouldn't have anything to do with anything except the Rome soccer team. Well, Berto said he didn't know what to say about that. But they did have a Rome soccer team tree, and they decorated it with the colors of the Rome soccer team. And you don't know what enthusiasm and fanaticism is until you see the eyes of a Rome soccer team fan, or any soccer team for that matter. But the Rome soccer team fans, they are fanatical. And so they have a Rome soccer team tree. I told that story so you can understand that sometimes in situations, our behavior that may be innocent in itself might communicate to other people what we are not teaching. I'm not trying to make that judgment for you. I long since made the judgment that singing all those hymns about the birth of Jesus around the 25th of December, while we said we don't believe that he was born at this time of the year, was a dead giveaway. That we were saying one thing and practicing another. Those are good songs. People began to think that we don't believe in the birth of Jesus. Oh, we've got a thing about it. We believe in it. How can we ever forget that God humbled himself and emptied himself to the extent that his voice was heard in the cry of a little baby in a stable in Bethlehem. How could we ever forget that? 365 days a year. How could we ever forget how God has emptied himself for our sake in his Son, Jesus Christ? 365 days a year. How can we ever forget he died on the cross, which is even more significant? Died for us. We remember that together here. But believe you me, it's a part of our consciousness every day we live. Because that's who we are. And we wouldn't be who we are if it hadn't been for that. And I sometimes think that the world embraces the little baby because he's so unintimidating. So sweet. They don't understand that he did that so that he could do the thing that we remember today. That cross says that our sins are serious business and that they affect our eternal destiny. And without the intervention of the Son of God and our earnest faith in him, our obedient faith in him, we are not going to escape the just deserts of our transgressions against God. He is extending mercy to us in his Son. But we have to reach out and take hold of that, and we have to be willing to pay any price and suffer any penalty in order to trust in him and hold fast to it. So, this morning, you who are not Christians in this audience, the time is here in your life when you're going to have to choose whether you're going to be his friend or not. Are you ashamed of it? Ashamed of what he taught? Ashamed of what he was and is? Are you ashamed to stand up in this society of ours, this society that is so mad with things, so concerned about matters of no consequence? Are you ashamed to stand up in this society and to say, I am a Christian? I challenge you with that this morning. I love you, but I'm challenging you. If you have never confessed that Jesus Christ is Lord, the only thing that can be imagined about that is that you're not yet ready to stand with him and to suffer with him, whatever may come as a consequence. And I'm urging you to believe in him, because he's the only hope we have. And I'm speaking too this morning to those who are Christians in this assembly, who on one significant day in their lives, we presume without any duress from anyone, said, yes, I do believe. And I'm willing to give myself away to him. From this point on, I'm his to use as he wishes. I'm not demanding anything at all for myself. But I want to be his disciple, and I want to reflect honor upon him in this world. I want to serve him. That's what that confession meant. And then you were buried in that liquid grave that the Lord appointed, and you were raised, forgiven and cleansed. Brother and sister, how have you lived since then? Have you lived to bring him honor? Or have you lived to bring him shame? Is your heart in this business? Is going to heaven more important to you than anything else? Is the name of Christ the greatest name of all? Is his family, his people, are they the most precious fellowship of all? Do you find joy in being in their company? Is it your privilege and your delight not only to be present with them every time they meet, that you can be there, but also to labor with them in doing the work of the kingdom of God? If that is not the case with you, then as certainly as our friend who does not and has not confessed Jesus Christ as Lord needs to be converted, you need to be converted again. You need to remember that which you have fallen away from and repent. And we're pleading with you today that you do so. Even remember, if you will, those earnest, godly people in the land of Italy fighting a lonely but valiant fight to be Christians in a society where there are so very, very few, unknown and unacknowledged, but determined that as God gives them life and breath, they're going to serve the Savior who died for them, regardless of the consequences. The invitation of Christ is extended as we stand together and sing this hymn.
There is a heaven in